This is Upstate's HealthLink on air. Linda Cohen along with you. Well, nationwide, there are over 100,000 people on waiting lists for organ donations. And for some, time can simply run out. And kidneys are among the organs with the greatest demand and the greatest transplant success. Well, here to tell us more about this is Dr. J. Keith Melançon. He's a professor of surgery and the director of transplantation at Upstate Medical University. Welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So nationwide, I guess kidneys are in very high demand.
They are. In the field, we kind of feel like we're the victim of our own success in this, because kidneys do so well when they're transplanted. But nationwide, there are over 85,000 people who are waiting for kidney transplant, and we only do about 16,000 per year. So the average wait is going to be 5 or 6 years for a kidney transplant. Here in the central New York region, people wait 4 to 5 years before they can receive a transplant. And the problem with that is if you have to wait for a deceased donor transplant, many patients, actually upwards of 30%, are going to die before they even get an opportunity to receive a transplant.
Yeah.
So kidney transplant is very successful. If you get a transplant, it is it's very good for your health. People that get transplanted pretty much have a normal life expectancy compared to people that have end-stage renal disease and have to be on dialysis. If you're on dialysis, your life's band is very much shortened. So transplant is the way to go, but unfortunately, we don't have nearly as much of this commodity to go around.
Wow. Yeah, I wonder why. I mean, I recall reading somewhere that the shortage has actually increased because the demand has grown. And why is there more of a demand for kidneys? Obviously, the success of the transplant.
Right.
But are there conditions that are making that happen?
Yeah. So, you know, the two top reasons to have kidney disease would be diabetes and hypertension. So most patients that are sitting on the transplant list right now have a combination of those. So now diabetes is the number one reason to have end-stage renal disease. As you might know, in this country right now, there is an epidemic of diabetes, both type 1 and type 2. Type 2 diabetes is mostly associated with obesity, and we have a big obesity problem in this country.
Yeah,
and,
true.
And therefore, we have a lot more kidney disease. So the other point is, because kidney transplant is now offered to many more patients with kidney disease, in other words, we've liberalized our criteria, many more people will qualify to get a transplant. If you go back to the early days of transplant, a lot of the people that we transplant today would never have been transplanted back then.
Is that because of newer technology, better skills? Why did it change?
Yeah, it's because of better technology. The surgeries are better tolerated because the care in the operating room, the care in the intensive care unit, the care in the hospital, all those things have gotten better. So so people are able to survive that big operation, whereas decades ago, if you were over the age of 50, if you had diabetes, that used to be a reason not to get a transplant.
Wow.
So we didn't do diabetics back in the 1980s. So our technology and the fact that we have done a better job of transplanting these people mean that more people qualify to receive transplant.
And
again, there's a shortage.
Yeah, and as you said, with the increase in diabetes and now them being qualified for transplantation, it sounds like the numbers have just continued to grow.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about, well, you also mentioned that the shortage can affect lives, I mean, can lead to death if the people have to wait too long.
So. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the main problem right now, if you're on the transplant list and you don't have a living donor, chances are you have a pretty good chance of dying before you ever would receive an organ offer, which is unfortunate.
That really is. So let's talk about donation, because you've alluded to a couple of, you said, basically waiting for a new death,
mm-hmm.
or a living donor. So let's talk about, I think there are several different ways you can get kidneys.
Basically, the two main ways is to either receive it from someone after they die, or you can receive it from someone that's alive. And usually, if it's going to be a living donor, it's going to be one of your family members or a friend that's going to come forward and donate to you. So a little less than half of the transplants we do today are going to come from living donors. The other way to get a transplant is a deceased donor. And a deceased donor transplant can occur in two basic ways. One is, once a person is what's called a brain dead, when you don't have blood supply going to the brain, by U.S. laws, you are considered deceased, although your body could still be alive. So if a person is in that category, like after an accident with a head injury, their family can decide at that point that they could be a donor. The other way to be a deceased donor would be if you have a medical condition that you're not going to recover from, however, you're not technically brain dead, then once we stop life support, you would die quickly. That's another way for a person to be a donor, because again, by U.S. laws, if life support is stopped and your heart stops beating, that's why it's called cardiac death, and your heart stops beating, then you're declared dead. So those are the two ways to be a deceased donor, or you could be a living donor.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with kidney transplant surgeon Dr. J. Keith Blanson, and we're talking about kidney transplants, and you just so well explained the issues of donation. But it seems to me that there would be a lot of challenges, therefore, in procuring organs.
Yeah, well, so the main thing when I talk to my patients is to try to get them to understand the whole process. And because the patients themselves actually become the best advocates for living donation as well as deceased donation. Once people are on the list to be deceased donors, then there's this whole complicated process where there is an interaction with the healthcare industry and the organ procurement industry in letting us know in transplant that this person is available to be a donor. That actually, given all of the interchangeable parts, works quite well. And people that want to be donors are usually, the organs are procured in a very humane fashion, and everything works well up to that point. The main obstacle is really just getting enough people to sign up to be donors. The saddest thing is when someone dies in an appropriate way and they have not consented to be a donor.
Yeah, it seems like that seems... I actually had the opportunity to speak with someone involved in organ procurement in this region and said that not enough people really consider organ donation or even know much about it. And I know there's been a new law that just went into effect in New York, I think it's called Lauren's Law, this past October, where right now, if you register for a driver's license, anyone over the age of 18, you have to answer a question if you want to join the state's donor list. And it's at this point, it's an optional question, but I think they're moving in the direction of wanting people to at least be aware that there's a need and that, you know, you could participate in that way, in giving your eyes, your, you know, any of your organs, if you should die in the appropriate way. So
yeah, it's a great law to have, because I'm up from Maryland, and I will tell you, we have this similar sort of law there, and I recently got my license renewed and had to sign up, and it's great because you don't really plan to die and become an organ donor, so it's something that you should sign up for. When you get your license or when you think about it, because there's always this possibility that you will be in that situation. And then it's your family that's going to be making the decision. It's much easier for your family to make that decision if you've already signed up to be a donor. And that's what we need in this country right now. We honestly need more deceased donors to come forward, because obviously you don't need the organs at that point. It's a little tougher to push living donation. I mean, obviously, people want to be living donors, but there is some risk in being a living donor, whereas there's no risk in being a deceased donor.
Absolutely. Tell me if you know much about this new research. There was some newest research that they were doing with liver buds, growing liver buds. And I mean, do you think that there's any hope in the next, you know, in the foreseeable, I don't know, next several decades, that we'll be in a position to grow things like kidneys?
Absolutely. You know, in our field right now, that is the most promising research, of taking cell-based therapies and then turning these cells into new organs. I think what's going to happen first, before we get to actually growing our own organs, would be to take our human cells and infuse them into animal tissues so that you can transplant animal tissues. You know, pig kidneys, hearts, livers are very similar to our organs. However, they have built-in proteins that make us really reject them. So you may have heard of people that have pig valves.
Yes, I was going to say that. Yeah. I had heard that.
So that works because the cells have actually been removed from the cartilage. But, you know, you wouldn't be able to do that with organ transplant. However, if we could infuse human cells and have the human cells cover at least the surfaces of the animal cells, then you could probably have animal transplant, which is called xenotransplantation. And I think that's going to be the next step before we get to the point of actually growing our own organs.
That's fascinating. I have not heard that before, and that's very, very hopeful.
It is. I honestly, in the history of transplant in this country, there have been some sometimes when chimpanzee and monkey organs, as well as other types of animals' organs, were used back in the 60s, and some of them were surprisingly successful for a short period of time. So there's a lot of hope there I think we're going to get there before we get to actually growing our own organs.
Is there also in this line of research better research or better knowledge with regard to the rejection currently that's going on? You know, the whole idea of the immune response that each person has to someone else's organ.
No,
I mean, are we doing better in that regard?
Oh, we're doing much better. As a matter of fact, that's probably in the last 20 years in transplant, that's probably the biggest advance that we made. You know, from the time that I was a medical student to where we are now, rejection, honestly, is not something that we have to worry much about because the medicine has improved so much so. Our main issue today, other than just having enough organs, would be long-term graft survival because our medications, although they're very, very good at stopping rejection, long-term, these strong medications take a toll on the organs. So that's really our main issue. So what we would like to do is we would like to have protocols where people stop taking the medicines after a certain period of time. That's called transplant tolerance, and that's something that I've done research in and a lot of people have, because I really think that's another part of the future of transplant. If we could get our patients where they didn't have to take these strong medicines for so many years, then once the organs become part of their bodies, then they could be like any other organ in their body.
That's fascinating. I was wondering, though, if some of this infusion of cells that you were talking about with regard to the animal model could also play a role in changing the rejection factor.
Oh, absolutely. For a matter of fact, you know, here in Boston, that is exactly what's going on. They're infusing cells with the organs to decrease rejection.
I also understand a little bit of time we have left. I don't want to run out of time. You're brand new to this faculty, and you are the director of transplantation. We're so very lucky to have you. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Where did you come from?
So I'm originally from Louisiana. That's why I have the French last name. I'm from southern Louisiana, and I did a college and medical school. I went to Tulane Medical School. I did my residency and surgery there as well. I left New Orleans and went to Minneapolis, and I did a transplant fellowship at the University of Minnesota. After finishing my fellowship, I was at Johns Hopkins and then Georgetown before moving over to George Washington University. And I started coming up here to upstate approximately 1 year ago to head up their program. So I'm originally from Louisiana, then the East Coast, and now I'm up in Syracuse.
Well, we are very, very lucky to have you. And I just so thank you for taking the time out of what I'm sure is an incredibly busy schedule to come in and talk with us. Maybe you'll come back after you've been here a while and tell us a little bit about your dreams or hopes or expectations for this whole new department.
Yes, it'd be wonderful. No, it's a wonderful beginning, and I can't wait.
My guest has been Dr. J. Keith Melanson. He's professor of surgery and the director of transplantation at Upstate Medical University. Thanks again for coming in. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.